You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Former All-Pro receiver Brandon Marshall thinks that Tom Brady and the Bucs are a perfect fit. Marshall said the Bucs might have the best receivers in the league, but it will still be a, quote, dink and dunk offense. So, Shannon, do you agree with Brandon Marshall?
No, but yeah, I do agree when he says it's going to be dink and dunk. That's an offense. They went bombs over Baghdad last year. Now they dinking and dunking. Oh, Skip Bayless, I thought Tom Brady still had a cannon. He can still throw it. Brandon Marshall, first of all, Brandon lost his mind. Hold on. The Saints. Are the Saints still in the NFC South? My note said over the last 3 years, the Saints have the most wins in the NFL. 37. Let's see. Saints. Drew Brees, Sean Payton, added Emmanuel Sanders. Kamara's still there. Skip, stop this notion. Yeah, I mean, we need to stop this. Look, everybody happy. Tom Brady seems to be happy. He's out of New England, under Coach Belichick's thumb. He's in Tampa. It's nice and sunny. He's staying on the Gulf of Mexico in Derek Jeter's big palatial estate. We get all of that. But now all of a sudden, because he's in the division, the Saints' window have closed. Who nailed it shut? I'm confused. I get, Skip, you know, Brandon, you know, he's training right now. He said he wants to be heavyweight boxing champion of the world. Maybe he had just come from sparring and he was a little tired. Maybe, you know, he got hit a couple of times and they knocked the air out of him. But he must be out of his mind if he thinks the window is closed for the Saints and it's wide open for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. You and I both know that's not the case. And my good old friends at FoxBet says the over-under for the Saints is 10.5 wins. Tied for with the 49ers for the highest in the NFC. The Bucs are at 9. Saints also have the second best odds to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl behind the 49ers. Now FoxBet, now last I checked, gambling sites don't get in the business to lose money. Do they, Skip? So I'm going to take my good old friends at FoxBet at their words. They not going, they not winning the division. Are they, Skip?
I already predicted that Brady's Buccaneers will win next year's division. I already told you they're going to go 12-4, and I figure the Saints will be very good at 11-5, but I believe they'll split their two games, but that Brady's schedule is a little easier than the Saints' schedule, and that they'll be right on time because he now has four weapons and two coaches he did not have in New England. And back to Brandon Marshall, I know him, I love him, I appreciate him. I've had him on lots of shows in the past. Miss him. Hope we can have him on Undisputed at some point soon. But the point is, his point was completely correct. And I remind you, Shannon, Bruce Arians has offensive genius about him. His consultant, Tom Moore, is an offensive guru. So obviously, they're not going to ask 43-year-old Tom Brady to do what they too often ask Jameis to do a year ago as the Bucs went 7-9. And that was to stand in the pocket and hold it and hold it and hold it until you're about to get blasted in the face and bomb it and then get blasted in the face. That's not going to happen this year. As Brandon said correctly, they're going to spread it out with all those four weapons, but there's a fifth weapon named little Scotty Miller, a rookie last year, sixth-round pick out of Bowling Green. He has elite speed and elite quickness in short area routes. He'll be in the slot. They've got the two tight ends. They can use one or both. They can get five receivers out into a quicker pattern than they threw last year. And Tom Brady will do a lot of quick throws. If you want to call them dinking and dunking, if they work for 5 yards, 7 yards, 8 yards, 4 yards, 5 yards, 6 yards, that's good. That will work. But trust me on this. If all of a sudden you want a single Mike Evans with a smaller DB, and Tom Brady sees it, and they make eye contact, trust me, Tom Brady will say, watch this, and he'll throw jump balls up to Mike Evans. If you get Chris Godwin on a slower DB on the other side singled up, trust me, Tom Brady will say, thank you, I will take that, because I'm going to remind you of my favorite stat from Brady last year in New England. On 20-plus yard throws into tight windows, 20-plus yards, that's getting way down the field, Tom Brady was tied for first in completion percentage in the National Football League. He can still throw it. There's nothing wrong with his velocity or his deep ball. It's the same as it was before. He'll be getting rid of the ball for the most part much quicker than Jameis ever thought about it, because nobody can speed read the way Tom Brady can. He's the greatest speed reader ever. So to me, they will re-cater this offense to Brady, and it will be very difficult to stop. And I told you, Todd Bowles' defense is being underrated, and this will be the team that emerges as the division winner next year.
So let me get this right. So in the words of one Skip Bayless, Bruce Arians might have sabotaged Jameis Winston because he asked him to stand in the line of fire and take the look down the gun barrel and take it right between the chops and throw it. Whereas he's going to ask Tom Brady, Tom, we're going to get the ball quicker out of your hands. So is that what you're telling me? He set Jameis up for failure. Is that what you're telling me? Because his offense is to push the ball down the field. Why would you not push the ball down the field?
Jameis Winston, if you watched him at Florida State and watched him through his NFL career, is not the most accurate passer mid-range or short range. He's better throwing the deep ball. Bruce was playing to Jameis's deep ball strength. Tom Brady is deadly accurate underneath as well as throwing the deep ball. So why wouldn't you take what the defense is going to give you underneath with accurate quick throws, which is Tom Brady's strength? That's all. He was trying to play to Jameis's strength, but unfortunately, Jameis tries to win one for the Gipper on every throw. Every throw out of Jameis's hand, he wants it to be a touchdown pass. So he threw 33 of them last year. That was second to Lamar in his 36 touchdown passes in the league. But he threw 30 interceptions, and he lost the ball on 5 fumbles. That's 35 turnovers, 12 more than any other quarterback in the league. And obviously, you can't win that way, and Tom Brady will not turn the ball over 35 times.
Well, if that's the case, why does, like, 5 of the 6 quarterbacks that have played for Bruce Arians have had their career-high interception if he always caters the offense to what they do really well? So guys like Andrew Luck, guys like Peyton Manning, had their career high when Bruce Arians is the offensive coordinator or the quarterback coach. Why is that? Because he caters the offense. Okay. There's Peyton no Manning. Way. Because you said it was...
No.
Go ahead. Peyton Manning was what?
Peyton Manning was a rookie when he led the NFL in interceptions under Bruce Arians. So, again, Peyton was a rookie. If they'd gone on together, they're going to do a lot more dinking and dunking because Peyton could dink and dunk with the best of them also.
Well, you do realize that it's not like Peyton threw. He was Peyton's OC in 98, 99, and 2000. It's not like Peyton had 5 interceptions in 99 and 2000. He had a high, he was in the double digits those years also. You do realize that, right, Skip? So what about Andrew Luck?
I do
Andrew
realize
Luck, any
that.
Good? Okay, I was just checking. Yeah, all but, I'm saying is this.
But what did he do worse? Andrew Luck, what was... I told you before the draft, or I told everybody on television before the draft, he holds the ball too long and tries to throw home runs on nearly every play. Again, Arians playing to Andrew Luck's strength, which became his weakness because he took way too many shots. And as we speak, he's retired. I hope he comes back, but he just took too much punishment in too short of a time.
Skip, that's BA's offense. I mean, because you said, okay, you said Jameis holds the ball too long and took shots. Andrew Luck, maybe that's the offense, because the one thing that there is no correlation between Andrew Luck and Jameis Winston. The only thing that they have in common is who called the plays, who's the OC at the time in which they took all those sacks and with the time they threw all those interceptions. And that's Bruce Arians. So he bears no responsibility?
Shannon, Bruce Arians now has the GOAT. The GOAT has been much better at what the GOAT does than Bruce has ever been at what he does, because Bruce hasn't won a Super Bowl as a head coach, so his credentials don't equal Brady's. So obviously, he's going to listen to Tom's input also, and obviously, they're going to have a lot of check with me's at the line of scrimmage, a lot of option routes that Brady will call. So he'll be dictating a lot of the play calling at the line of scrimmage. It will be Tom Brady's offense, which with a whole lot of input from Arians and especially the great Tom Moore. So and obviously Byron Leftwich is calling the plays. So they will all get their heads together, and the offense is going to look a lot different this year than it did last year, because obviously Tom Brady is not going to risk a career-ending injury for one touchdown pass. He hasn't done that for the last five, six, 7 years of his career. Well, that's why he's had the longevity that he's had.
Well, they asked that of Jameis. They asked Jameis to stare down the gun barrel and wait till the last possible second to throw the ball down the field. Why would they ask that of Tom Brady?
Well, Tom's 43 years of age, and they would like to win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady, and he'd like to play until he's 48 years of age. So obviously, he's not going to do the things. That's what Jameis did best, was hold it, and bomb it.
That's what was asked of Jameis. Jameis says, I'm 25. I would like to see my 30th birthday, but y'all asked me to stand in the line of fire and don't flinch. Well, Tom Brady should be asked to do the same thing, right? You said he's that same guy. Tom Brady, nothing has changed. When I said Tom Brady was starting to flinch, he's not flinching. But now you want to make sure he doesn't flinch, because all you want to do is dink and dink and dink and dink. No, push the ball down the field. No risk it, no biscuit.
It sounds to me like you're getting nervous that Tom Brady's going to be full-on Tom Brady next year.
No mercy.
Just days after it was reported that Dak Prescott would not participate in the Cowboys' virtual offseason program with no deal, there is now a report that the team and Dak are not any closer to reaching an agreement. So, Shannon, I start with you. How will this play out for Dak and the Cowboys?
It's probably going to end up having to play 1 year on the franchise tag deal. Skip, they're not getting anywhere close, because I think the thing is the Cowboys want everything on their term. They want the length of the contract on their terms. They want the money on their terms. They want the wording and the language in the contract on their terms. And Dak's like, no, you got to give up some concessions. If you want 6 years, it's going to cost you $40 million. If you don't, we're going to have to come to some kind of agreement here, because I want four and to get an opportunity to get back at the bite of the apple. Well, the Cowboys are like, nah, we're going to do 6 years, because, Skip, you know, obviously, they want to spread it, because you can spread $80, $90 million over 6 years a lot better than you can spreading $80, $90 million over 4 years. And I think everybody gets that. That's how, you know, contracts will work. The sign-up bonus is prorated over the length of the contract, so we can spread it out over 6 years. Dak wants something more in line of 4 years, because he wants to get back at the table. He knows they just got labor peace for the next decade, and the new TV contract's about to become up, and there's going to be more money. Dak doesn't want to be 3 years into a deal with 3 years left on an ISO or an obsolete contract for the quarterback position. But what this tells me, I don't care what anybody said, and they can dress it up however they want to, the Cowboys are not sold on Dak Prescott, because we saw other quarterbacks get their money, be it Wentz, be it Goff, be it Matt Ryan, be it Matthew Stafford, Russell Wilson. Everybody else has gotten their money. Ryan Tannehill, after 8 games, got his money. And they dilly-dallying around with Dak Prescott. Dak, I keep telling you, they tell you one thing, they smile in your face, and they talking behind your back, bro, because it's not jiving, Skip Bayless. You know it's not jiving. My grandpa used to tell my brother now, he said, boys, I see better than I hear. Now, I hear what Jerry and Steven saying. Dak is a franchise quarterback. We can win multiple Super Bowls. But when it's time to, you know, pay up, they money jump funny. Dak Prescott, See, you come training camp. I told you, Skip Bayless, this is what was going to happen. Y'all playing with this man. Dak said, y'all play all you want to. I see you at training camp, and let's hope for the best. But, hey, it is what it is.
So, you are loving this. I am hating this more and more by the day. And back to Jenny's question, how will this play out? I'm pretty sure it's going to play out badly for both sides. I think this whole thing is going slowly south. I have no more positive expectations on Dak Prescott getting any deal done by the July 15th deadline. It just feels like they're getting farther and farther apart, and it feels like there's starting to be some resentment, bitterness, rancor between the two sides because Dak is starting to act, to me, out of character. He's starting to do things that make me not even recognize the Dak Prescott that for years I have defended on this show. All last year, you told me how below average Dak was to the point that you often gave him Fs for his performance. Fs. And I would give him an A minus and you'd say, no, he was terrible. And now you want Jerry to pay terrible. And I don't understand that because that is the classic speaking out of both sides of mouth. But obviously you want Jerry to wreck my salary cap, our salary cap. And again, I'm pretty sure that Dak and his new agent are asking for unrealistic money, out of bounds money. As much as I love him as a quarterback, he's not Patrick Mahomes. I don't think he's quite as good as Deshaun Watson. I've said that from the start. I still love him. I still believe in him. He didn't have a great year last year. He put up a lot of numbers, but my man Shannon Sharp kept telling me empty calories in losing efforts. They went 8-8. He didn't make enough of the plays to win the games to get them over the hump. And I can't defend that, and I didn't defend that. So my point, Shannon, is all of a sudden, I'm seeing a new Dak. And when the other day we had the conflict over how many people were at Dak's party or dinner, whichever it was, last Friday night at his house, a week ago tonight, in Prosper, Texas, just north of Dallas. Remember, the TMZ story said there were around 30, and Stephen Jones then went on his radio show to say, that won't happen again. That was after the police got called to check it out. And Dak came right on top of that with a public rebuke of Stephen Jones and in turn Jerry Jones by saying, no, we had fewer than 10 people there. Well, Dak, as Shannon agreed with me, we saw the TMZ video of this buffet spread, the video sweep of it. It looked like you were ready to feed 50 people there. So it's hard to believe there weren't 30 plus. It's hard to believe that the police were called because you were having a 9 or 10 person dinner party. I think there are a whole bunch of cars and maybe a whole bunch of noise. And I'm good with that most times, but not at this time that we're in right now in this country. So again, it looked like he drew a line and kind of quote unquote went to war with Stephen Jones publicly. That's not my quarterback. And then we had the story this week, Shannon, that he's not going to participate in any of the offseason, virtual as it might be. But it sounds like he's going to sacrifice the goal of winning for his personal gain in his contract. And when you're the quarterback, sure, you can't do that. Not for this team, absolutely not at can't this time.
Yeah. But Skip, you said, Shannon, you're talking out of both sides of your neck. Because you said he got F's, and now you want Jerry to pay him. Where Skip Bayless gave him A's, but doesn't want him to get paid. I'm confused. You also said you can't defend empty calorie stats and losing efforts, and they go in 8-8. But you fought me tooth and nail at the time. So I'm confused, Skip Bayless. If you're giving him A's at the time last year, why do you have a problem giving him $40 million? If you gave him A's, you said last year he's worth it. Oh, he's a top five quarterback. Now when it comes time to pay up, now he's not worth his money. Dak is starting to see what I've been seeing all along. Don't reward me with your praise. Reward me with that money. because I can't spend praise. I can spend money. So you tell you and Jerry, y'all say one thing, but when it comes time to sign them documents, I can't get no signature on it. Because Skip Bayless was telling me, he gets an A+. I'm like, Jenny, how did he get an A for this? He gets an A. My quarterback's unbelievable. Now your quarterback's been unbelievable all year. It comes time to get that money. Well, he was 8-8. He didn't make the throw. He lost to Carson Wentz. He lost to Teddy Bridgewater. Yada, yada, yada. All the things that I tried to tell you during the season, which you had a problem with. Now, I agree with you. The Hall of Famer said Dak didn't get it done. I'm not going to let you off the hook like that, Skip. Pay that man $30 million, Jerry. Pay him.
I'm not going to let you off the hook because I told you eye to eye across the debate desk in the Fox studio on the Monday after the New Orleans loss, 12-10? I told you Dak missed an early throw across the back line of the end zone to an open Randall Cobb. I docked him for that. I definitely didn't give him an A for that game. He came on hot at the end of the game, but was too little, too late, and they scored only 10 points. And I definitely did not give him an A for the game at Philadelphia, a game that was sink or swim to win the division. You could win or lose, lose and go home. And what did he do late in the game? He had Tavon Austin break wide open for a touchdown, and he just missed him. And I told you the next day, he missed him. That could have been the throw of the game. They would have had to convert a two-point conversion to tie it at 17, but they lost the game in large part because he missed that throw. So they're the two throws where that was the difference between 10-6. You got to make those throws. Again, he's a top 10 quarterback to me, but he's not top five, not yet. He could be at some point, but right now he has not earned or projects to Patrick Mahomes money. And if they're asking for 40+ million a year, you can't do it because I'm with you. Jerry doesn't think he's that good. And all I know, Shannon, is I do know Jerry Jones. And when Jerry says, when have you known me not to get one of these done? That's true. That's what he said before he got Zeke done ahead of last year's opener, right? And right now, he's not getting this done because he's up against a quarterback and an agent who are asking for out-of-bounds money. It's so much money that you're overpaying. And remember, look what happened to the Rams. They overpaid Jared Goff and they overpaid Todd Gurley. I think they overpaid Aaron Donald. I don't think they'll ever get that much bang for their buck with Aaron Donald. Well, the Cowboys are teetering on overpaid across the board. Zeke, DeMarcus Lawrence, Jalen Smith, I can go on. Obviously, Amari. That was too much money for Amari, but you're sort of damned if you do or don't. You can't let him go. You need somebody there, so you overpaid. Now you're going to way overpay for the quarterback. Well, you're going to wind up in salary cap hell, stuck at 8-8 if you're not careful.
Well, see, Skip, Jerry used to getting deals done on his terms. Dax, for the first time, is bucking. Skip, Ozzie Newsome told me something a long time ago. He said, son, there are 53 guys on the roster. He says, probably 40 of those guys going to take what the hell I give them. Now, there's going to be five or six guys, we're going to be in tough negotiations. But they're going to be four or five guys, you're going to be at their mercy. And you give them what the hell they want. That's how it works out, Skip Bayless. That's how it works out. And that's what they're doing. All the, they're like they were at the mercy of Amari Cooper. Amari Cooper could have got what he wanted because they knew there were other teams bidding. All you had to do, if you wanted to see what Dak Prescott's value was, not put the tag on him. Don't tag him. Let him go see what the market would bear. And then, if you want a match, he can bring that back to you and say, okay, this is what's out there. I'll give you an opportunity to match. It's not, okay, I'm sorry. But for you to put the tag on him and say, well, he's not worth that, you shouldn't have put the tag on him, and then you could have found out what he was worth.
You know where I'm afraid this is all heading? Is that Dak will reject the tag and that Dak will actually start holding out a la Le'Veon in Pittsburgh, holding out real games, missing real games. And if that happens, obviously I'm sunk next year.
Shannon over there celebrating. We're done talking about Dak.
No mercy.
After the NBA's all-time dynasties were ranked a couple of days ago, Shaq was asked if his three-peat Lakers would have beaten Michael Jordan's Bulls team. Shaq's answer was short, of course, yes, easily. Shannon, who do you think would have won?
Man. The question I'm going to ask, like Shaq asked at the end, which team is Phil Jackson going to coach? That's going to be the very interesting part, Skip. But if we can cut, if we got two Phil Jacksons, Skip, I think I might have to take Shaq Lakers. Because you know why, Skip? Because of what you said. The most unstoppable, the most dominant figure that you saw was that three-year stretch in which Shaquille O'Neal was unguardable. He, in the three finals, he was averaged 36, 15, and 3. Now, you have to understand what Michael Jordan went against in his finals run. He went against Mark West, Kevin Duckworth, rest his soul, Cliff Livingston. Skip, that's not going to cut it. And Bill Cartwright, Will Perdue, Luke Longley was not going to be able to do anything with the Diesel. Not then. And the game has started to change a little bit. So, Skip, I'm saying that we're going to take prime Jordan, and we're going to put him in the 2000 where we had started to see a little bit more emphasis on the three-point shot because with those snipers around him with Robert Horry and Derek Fisher. And you got to realize, Skip, Kobe has started all of a sudden being Kobe. So I'm going to say, I'm going to say just part of, because of they got Shaq and nobody's going to be able to do anything with the daddy, I'm taking Diesel. I'm taking the Lakers. I'm sorry. I got to take the Diesel.
By the way, Phil coached Michael first, so I think Phil belongs to Jordan, not to the Lakers. I get Phil on my side. Yep.
Okay.
You know what I think. I'm going to say it again. I'm not going to bet against Michael Jeffrey Jordan, even in a series that would be epic. That would be an all-time great battle to watch between the Shaq, Kobe, Lakers, and Jordans. I'm going to go to the end of the line. I'll go to the 98 Bulls because we're talking about the Last Dance Bulls. Let's just take that team.
Right.
I told you that was the greatest defensive team I have ever seen in the NBA. It was nasty. It was physical. It was shrewd operation. It was... They knew each other. They were unified. They played off each other. It was hard to get the basketball across half court against Pippen, Jordan, and Ron Harper because they were so long and so strong and so quick and just so committed to just terrorizing the opposition just as they tried to get the ball past half court. So I'm going to give them the big edge on playing defense. And then I'm going to remind you that the Shaq Kobe Lakers went down ingloriously. They lost that last finals in five games to the Pistons. Chauncey was the MVP of that finals. And obviously it was Rip Hamilton, Ben Wallace, Tayshaun, Rasheed. But it wasn't up to the caliber of star power that the Lakers had. But what did the Lakers have underlying? Shaq and Kobe never quite got along. They were always at odds, if not at each other's throat. And it really manifested itself in that finals when they came apart and somebody had to go, and it was finally Shaq that had to go. So I'm going to give Jordan's team a psychological edge because they were united around Michael. And if we want to talk about Shaq, and I've said it many times, and you quoted me, and I appreciate that. I'm standing by it. Shaq was the most dominating offensive force I ever saw during that period. It was almost impossible to referee him, but he never had to play against what would hit him between the eyes in this series, and that would be Dennis Rodman, who's not 7 feet tall. He's probably 6'8"-ish. But Dennis Rodman was a nasty physical defender who knew every trick in the book. He would be in Shaq's way, along with one of the 7-footers, either Winnington or Luke Longley, would be in Shaq's way every time he started to wheel. And every time he started to wheel and dive to the basket, you'd have Jordan or Pippen or Ron Harper clawing at the basketball and knocking it out of his hands. He would get frustrated by that collapsing defense on him. And then I'm going to remind you, as Kobe always said, the late, great Kobe always said, my big brother was Michael. And I do think that Kobe in the end would be a little bit overwhelmed trying to play big brother. Obviously, you had a big brother who was a great player. And would be a little bit overwhelmed by it. And in the end, the greatest two-point jump shooter in the history of the game, Michael Jordan, I believe that he would be the difference in this series. I think it would be a seven-game series. I think it might even go to the last shot. And at the end, right on cue, you would have Michael Jordan pushing off on Kobe, getting a little push off, rising, holding the pose as he swished a two-point jumper to win the game seven by 1 point. So I got Jordan making the last clutch shot over Shaq and Kobe.
Nah, Skip, because at that point in time, Kobe was starting to be Kobe. He wasn't Kobe. He was starting to be Kobe. Up until then, he was Kobe Bryant. He was starting to become Kobe. He was starting to take over ball games. Shaq getting foul trouble, I got it, dog. I'll bring it home. And Kobe was not going to shrink it. Kobe didn't shrink in moments. And the last thing he would ever want to do is to shrink in front of the man that meant the most of him basketball-wise. You know, other than obviously his father was a big influence on his life, Skip. But he and Skip, he modeled his game. I mean, they're going to be looking at each other. He's going to look down. You got a wristband on your elbow. You got a knee sleeve pulled down like that. You wearing baggy shorts. You chewing gum. You walking like, whoa, what you? Am I looking at me? It's almost like they're going to be looking at each other, Skip. The only difference is one has hair and the other's bald at that point in time. But Skip, you got to be able. Dennis Rodman ain't going to do nothing with Shaq. First of all, that's not happening. And then, you know, Horace Grant was on those teams too, Skip. Mm-hmm. He ain't bothering nothing, Skip Bayless. Shaq, 36, 15, and 3. Now, Mark West and Livingston and rest is on Kevin Duckworth. That's what Jordan faced at the big man. Come on, Skip. You know that Ziesel was going to run through them.
Okay, but time out. If we look at the three finals that they won, remember, Shaq's going up against Allen Iverson, Sixers, overachievers.
Mutombo.
That's not a huge test for him. They had Mutombo, but again, you got, he was up there in years at that point. Then how about Reggie's Pacers? Reggie was getting up there in years. I don't know. That was pretty easy for the Lakers. And then it was Jason Kidd, you know, in the Nets. They were pretty good, but they couldn't deal with Shaq. So I'm sorry. Right. I'm not seeing it. There was no Horace Grant in 98. So it would be just the two big 7-footers and Dennis Rodman.
No, I'm saying Horace is on our side. The Lakers had Horace at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got you.
Hold on, but Skip, make it seem like Jordan was beating the 85 Lakers and the big three Celtics. Look at what he went against. Phoenix, what big guy they had? Supersonics, what did they have? The Trailblazers, what did they have? Utah, really? Karl Malone wasn't a 5, Karl Malone was a 4. They never faced anything like this. Never.
Okay, but you can figure. Listen, the Trailblazers were loaded. That was Clyde the Glide and Terry Porter, and Duckworth was huge, and that was a deep basketball team. That was a tough matchup for them, but they always figured it out, and they did have to play Barkley, who was a great player, greater than anybody I think that the Shaq Kobe Lakers had to face in that run. So, you know, to me, they would just figure it out. I think Shaq would get bothered by that defense because there'd be 4-on-1 at all times, and he would have a hard time. Harder time than he had against his other finals opponents.
I give Skip, the Lakers, what they had to face was getting out of the West in San Antonio with Tim Duncan and David Robinson. That was their test. And once you got past that, then it was pretty much smooth sailing on the backside. But just getting out of the West when you had to go through Duncan and Robinson and Pop and some of those teams, that's what made it hard. And once you got past that, it was smooth sailing. But Shaq was big and skilled. Nobody else, Jordan never faced that. No mercy.
Jalen Green is the number one high school basketball prospect, and he has now decided to bypass college, and he will be joining the NBA's G League developmental program. He will also be joined by another top prospect, Isaiah Todd, who says he's also skipping college. So, Shannon, what do you think? Do you like that they're doing this?
I love it. Skip, I don't think this is going to be, you know, now this is going to be the wave of the future, but I do believe the top recruits, this is a very viable option for them. I think the Green young man, Skip, is going to make $500,000. Skip, that's real money. And I look at it like this. If somebody's going to make money off my abilities, it should be me. It will force the NCAA, what you going to do? All this, we can't pay them. We want to keep it student athlete. We want to keep it amateuristic and all that other foolishness. You're going to have to do something. Because headphones and sweatsuits ain't going to cut it. And $500,000, Skip, and it gives them an opportunity to pursue sneaker deals and other streams of revenue. Nah, why wouldn't I? If I'm the number one recruit and I can take this avenue and make money, have other streams of money also, Skip, and it's in the same length of time. Guess what, Skip? 1 year, I can get to the NBA. I'm going to pursue this. I love it. I love guys maximizing the opportunity, betting on themselves. So, because what do I get out, Skip? I go to Duke. I go to North Carolina. What am I going to get? A sweatsuit? And thanks for coming, because I'm only going 1 year if I'm a top player. Nah, I love this, Skip. I love this. I don't like it. I love it. Mm.
Good points, all. Before I answer Jenny's question, I'm going to take a quick right turn and mention that Lil Wayne just texted me, and he called me Nathaniel, and he did so because last week on the show, Shannon Sharp said my middle name was Nathaniel, and it's not my middle name. I've never even known a Nathaniel in my life. I don't know one now. And yet Shannon called me Nathaniel. Lil Wayne thought it was so funny. He's now calling me Nathaniel. And I guess I get a kick out of it, but it's not my, maybe it's my new middle name. I don't know.
It is now.
Back to the drawing board. Yeah, it is now. Thank you for that. What I would love to see, obviously, is what happened during LeBron's day when if you didn't want to go to college and you wanted to go make the money you knew you could make in pro basketball, you should be able to go. It remains unconstitutional that these kids can't go straight from high school and make however much they could make as a top pick in the NBA draft straight out of high school. I know a lot of people say, oh, but they're not going to college. If they want to go to college, they can go in the off season. They can get a degree if they so choose. I liked college. I was cut out for college. That was just me. I didn't have the talent that these kids obviously have to play pro basketball. So there's a part of me that's still a little bit angry that they're forced to either go to Australia for 500 grand or to the G League for 500 odd grand, somewhere in that ballpark. It's, as Shannon says, it's good money, but they could make better money if they were going straight into the NBA as a high pick in the draft, even if they just slotted in. Okay, now, there's one thing they're going to miss going G League or Australia to me, Shannon. The only thing that can help speed their growth if they go for 1 year to Duke or Kentucky or wherever they're going to go, Michigan, that is that when you get to play on national TV in big games on huge stages such as March Madness, I think it helps hone your ability to handle pressure. Like in the G League, I think they're going to play like a dozen games and nobody's really going to be watching. So when Jalen Green actually gets into the NBA and plays in a big game, that's going to be the first big stage game he's ever played in. So I do think it helps Zion, let's say, to play in the ACC tournament in a big national TV game on Friday and Saturday night, Sunday afternoon. And I do think it helped that he played in the March Madness tournament, you know, in the NCAA tournament where you're playing on Sunday with the whole world, so to speak, watching you. I think that's a good, that's the only good thing about playing 1 year of college basketball, because the rest of it, to your point, Shannon, is just, it's just foolish hypocrisy, because a lot of the kids aren't even going to class for the year anyway.
Exactly. Skip, you know what you never heard? When we see all these young men and women that leave high school and go straight to the military, not one person say, you know what, they should go to college first. They should be made to go to college before they can go to the military. Nobody says that. But they would, no. Oh, I got a chance to make $5 million, $10 million. Oh, you need to go to school. Skip, I go to school to get an education to help me make money. If somebody wanted to kick out that middle process and say, okay, Shannon, go from high school to straight making money, who am I to say no? I wish I might. Skip, that would be like you coming out of high school. You're a great writer. And some publishing company say, Skip, we want you to start writing for us right away. Here it is, when you started going to school, we got $150,000, $200,000. Huh, $150,000, $200,000, or I could go to college. Mm-hmm. People gonna go get that money, Skip. That's why you were going to college, so I can go get me a good job and make money. Somebody's gonna give me the good job right after high school. Huh? And guess what, Skip? You remember when Zion was in school, his only year, they play in North Carolina. The tickets going for $2,000, $3,000, $4,000. How much of that money Zion get? Zion said, guess what? I agree with you, Skip, 100%. If a guy has the ability, LeBron would have got nothing from going to Ohio State for a year. Kevin Durant got nothing. Kevin Durant should have been allowed to go to the NBA. But not his here nor there. But Skip, if I can go make $500,000 and bypass college, why wouldn't I do that? When LeBron, you hear LeBron ain't going back and getting no college degree. Trust me.
Okay. And don't get me started, Shannon, on your league, the NFL, where the Constitution says you have to go for 3 years to college. Don't get me started on an Adrian Peterson or, dare I say, a Maurice Claret. They could have played pro football when they were playing freshman football at OU and the Ohio State. It's just wrong, and someday somebody will make this right. No
mercy. Thank you for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Keep an eye out for the weekend edition of the podcast tomorrow morning, featuring this week's best segments. Have a great weekend, everyone.
Facts, sports, one of one.